Recently, Justin Taylor shared some quotes from three different men that reflect on a biblical view of success in ministry. Those three men are Mark Driscoll, Francis Schaeffer, and J.I. Packer. And I wanted to share this in light of Bible translation, which can often be measured by numbers. Its success is often judged based on the quantity of output. How many New Testaments were finished this year? How many complete Bibles? How many copies have been used or sold? How many people have been impacted or saved as a result of Bible translations, etc.? So whether we're a massive organization like Wycliffe or a single person working out in the middle of nowhere, there's always a temptation towards ambition and to evaluate whether or not we are successful by the world's wisdom and by leaning on our own understanding. Although the following quotes have to do with churches and pastoring, I'd like to suggest that we ask ourselves as we listen, ask ourselves this question: how can we guard our hearts in this regard when it comes to the world of Bible translation? Now, unfortunately, Mark Driscoll was an example of buying into the world's standards of success. In a sermon in 2006, 8 years before he abandoned the church discipline process from his elders, resigned from his church, and eventually saw Mars Hill Church dissolve completely, he said the following: "I'm a guy who is highly competitive. Every year I want the church to grow. I want my knowledge to grow. I want my influence to grow. I want our staff to grow. I want our church plants to grow. I want everything because I want to win. I don't want to just be where I'm at. I don't want anything to be where it's at. And so for me, it is success and drivenness, and it is productivity, and it is victory that drives me constantly. That's my own little idol, and it works well in a church because no one will ever yell at you for being a Christian who produces results. So I found the perfect place to hide. And I was thinking about it this week. What if the church stopped growing? What if we shrunk? What if everything fell apart? What if half the staff left? Would I still worship Jesus, or would I be a total despairing mess? I don't know. By God's grace, I won't have to find out. But you never know." Now let's contrast this with what Schaeffer wrote in his book, No Little People. "As there are no little people in God's sight, so there are no little places. Nowhere more than in America are Christians caught in the 20th century syndrome of size. Size will show success. If I am consecrated, there will necessarily be large quantities of people, dollars, etc. This is not so. Not only does God not say that size and spiritual power go together, but he even reverses this, especially in the teaching of Jesus, and tells us to be deliberately careful not to choose a place too big for us. We all tend to emphasize big works and big places, but all such emphasis is of the flesh. To think in such terms is simply to hearken back to the old, unconverted, egoist, self-centered me. This attitude, taken from the world, is more dangerous to the Christian than fleshly amusement or practice. It is the flesh." Now, J.I. Packer also has the following to say in his book, A Passion for Faithfulness: "I have found that churches, pastors, seminaries, and parachurch agencies, like Bible translation agencies throughout North America, are mostly playing the numbers game. That is, defining success in terms of numbers of heads counted or added to those that were there before. Church growth theorists, evangelists, pastors, missionaries, news reporters, and others all speak as if, number one, numerical increase is what matters most. Number two, numerical increase will surely come if your techniques and procedures are right. Number three, numerical increase validates ministries as nothing else does. And number four, numerical increase must be everyone's main goal. There are four unhappy consequences of these assumptions. First, big and growing churches are viewed as far more significant than others. Second, parachurch specialists who poll in large numbers are venerated, while hardworking pastors are treated as near non-entities. Third, lively laymen and clergy, too, are constantly being creamed off from the churches to run parachurch ministries. And because they specialize on a relatively narrow front, they can be expected to produce quicker and more striking results. Fourth, many ministers of not-so-bouncy temperament and not-so-flashy gifts return to secular employment in disillusionment and bitterness, concluding that the pastoral life of steady service is a game not worth playing. And then Packer says, "In all of this, I seem to see a great deal of unmortified pride, either massaged, indulged, and gratified, or wounded, nursed, and mollycoddled. Where quantifiable success is God, pride always grows strong and spreads through the soul as cancer sometimes gallops through the body. Shrinking spiritual stature and growing moral weakness thence result, and in pastoral leaders, especially those who have become sure they are succeeding, the various forms of abuse and exploitation that follow can be horrific. Orienting all Christian action to visible success as its goal, a move which to many moderns seems supremely sensible and businesslike, is thus more a weakness in the church than its strength. It is a seedbed both of unspiritual vainglory for the self-rated succeeders and of unspiritual despair for the self-rated failures, and a source of shallowness and superficiality all around. The way of health and humility is for us to admit to ourselves that in the final analysis, we do not and cannot know the measure of our success the way God sees it. Wisdom says, leave success ratings to God and live your Christianity as a religion of faithfulness rather than an idolatry of achievement. Packer also said that the book called Liberating Ministry from the Success Syndrome should be required reading for everyone who wants to be a pastor, and I'll link it in the description if you're interested. So may God lead us not into the temptation of looking at ourselves and others through the lens of worldly wisdom and fleshly ambition, but rather to think with sober judgment according to the grace God has given us. As we close out this year, I want to encourage all of you to consider how Bible translation can be incorporated into your resolutions for 2022. Does your church have a vested interest in Bible translation at all? Have you encouraged your leaders to think more intentionally about how Bible translation factors into the mission of your church? Does your family have some way they are praying or giving, serving, or encouraging the workers? Along the same lines of this episode, another temptation is to think, I can only give $10 a month or a year, which is embarrassing, so I won't give at all. That's not embarrassing. Don't let the day of small things deter you from the joy of giving and being a part of glorifying God and loving His word in this way. And I'd encourage you to look with discernment for where to invest. Ask deep and hard questions and do some research and be creative. There are many indigenous Bible translation organizations around the world that you could give to directly instead of defaulting to the big American organizations. And one more tip, start a relationship with people first. Bible translation is done by people, not vending machines that you just put money into and get a product. Having a relationship with people on the field is equally as important as any donation you might give. So that's all for this episode. Thank you for listening. I'm Andrew Case. This is the Working for the Word podcast, where we believe that the Bible is a unified, God-breathed, God-centered, hope-giving book, sweeter than honey and pointing to Jesus.